5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
So I thought we'd talk about a single Guardian article in this segment.
Uh-oh.
Because sometimes there's such a selection of mask-off moments that you just want to go through the entire thing until you get to the very end, where they're just telling you what, you know, saying the quiet part out loud. And the interesting thing about it is it's about representation and about what minority representation in the UK looks like. And so if you want to understand the concept of representation, go over to loadcs.com, sign up for £5 a month, help us keep the lights on because, of course, we're demonetized, and go and check out my book club on the concept of representation. Now, this is one of the most important ones, I think, because representation is a term that we hear a lot of, but rarely do we hear it explained. And Hannah Pitkin does an amazing job of exploring the ways in which the term representation is used. And at its most simple, it is used to say, well, something absent is being made present in its absence. So what is being made present while it's not otherwise here is what a representation is. And that's actually important when you think about, okay, well, let's talk about representation. What is being made present in, say, British politics? What's being made present in the Labour Party? What's being made present in the Conservative Party? What are we supposed to take from all of this? So let's go to this Guardian article. It's called Yousaf and Sunak. Politics is making progress, but society must catch up. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? So Yousaf and Sunak. So we're talking about two Asian names. We've got a Pakistani man and an Indian man. Politics is making progress. So progress is what? The increasing number of Asians we have in politics. But society must catch up. So does society need more Asians?
Well, apparently the argument? The demographics of Britain are simply offensive to whoever this Guardian writer is. Well, I feel like, judging from the name, they have a vested interest as well.
Well, that's another point, isn't it? Sunder Katwala, that's an Indian name. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So we have an Indian man saying, okay, we need more Indians in Britain to represent India in Britain. Why? I thought you wanted independence from Britain.
Mm.
And I thought there was a good thing that India had independence from Britain. Why does India now have to come and
colonize?
I didn't want to say it, but that's kind of what Sunder's saying, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, someone like Winston Churchill would have been like, well, we need more Smiths and Joneses at the top of Indian politics. And so it's kind of like, it's got this weird inverse colonial attitude that Sunder's putting across. And so this is why I wanted to cover this, because it's like, look, but look at the subheading there. A truly equitable country is some way off, despite recent successes at the very top. It's like, right, so we can be ruled by Indians, but that's still not a fair society.
But it's a weird framing as well, because they're just saying equitable in the racial sense, aren't they? In the,
yes.
They mean purely race, but Rishi Sunak is like a billionaire, isn't he? A multi-millionaire.
A billionaire Hindu. Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's helpful for Guardian's concept of equitability.
Well, that's the great question, because he's the MP for Richmond in North Yorkshire, which is like 96% English. And an average salary of £23,000 a year. How, in what way does Rishi Sunak represent Richmond? I mean, he was born in Southampton, raised in Southampton, went to a private school, married an Indian billionaire's daughter. He is in no way representative of Richmond. Mm-hmm. And so, but this, oh, well, politics is making progress. So that's progress, right? So to have an Indian billionaire ruling over the English Yorkshireman, that's progress. Right, okay. That's not what I would have called progress. That's what I would have called.
It's a very strange idea, isn't it?
I would have called that colonization. Mm. But I mean, I don't write for The Guardian, so what do I know, right? So they say, as Rishi Sunak called Humza Yousaf to congratulate the new SNP leader, dozens of South Asian family WhatsApp groups shared memes asking whether the British Indian Prime Minister and the Scottish Pakistani First Minister would be negotiating the partition of Britain. Right. Do you feel represented in British politics if you aren't Pakistani or Indian?
Well, I certainly don't feel represented. No. Not, I mean, just in terms of political belief. I mean, necessarily... I mean,
just in terms of politics.
Yeah.
But what's being made present here? Because the South Asians, as this Guardian author writes, feel made present here.
They're already talking about importing their sectarianism from abroad, aren't they?
Right? Exactly. And so now it's like, right, okay, well, I don't really feel like I have a place in this because I don't really know anything about Indian politics and I don't really feel connected to it in any way, shape, or form. But South Asian people apparently do, according to this guy.
Although, if South Asian people in Britain want to stick it to the Scots, I mean, why not?
I don't hate just the like Scots, got you know? I don't hate anyone, but it's just...
I'm half Scottish, though.
They don't seem to understand that they're speaking to a very closed constituency, and I am outside of that. And so I'm like, okay, I don't feel represented in this, right? They say, Yousaf, as First Minister of Scotland, is the first Muslim national leader in any Western democracy of predominantly Christian heritage. The image of Yousaf leading prayers as he and his family broke their Ramadan fast on the first night of the official Butte House residence was warmly received, except by a surly fringe. But it's the same with Rishi Sunak taking part in Dilwali in number 10. So, okay, what's being made present in these places? And it's not traditional Scottish or English cultural life, is it?
Especially in Scotland. I don't think there are many Muslims in Scotland. No, in fact, it's a very white area, isn't it?
And it's a very Scottish area.
And I mean, I can't blame immigrants for not wanting to go up to Scotland, but at the same time...
No one can. But the point is, what's being made present in Butte House and what's being made present in number 10? It's India and Scotland, India and Pakistan, which is what this Guardian author recognizes. That's what she's saying. I recognize that India and Pakistan are being made present in these places. How should the Scots feel about that? How should the English feel about this? Some noted that his Presbyterian rival, so a sort of traditional Scottish religious sect, the Presbyterians, right, may have had a very different response to praying publicly. Yeah, of course. She would have been criminalized, probably, because Christians praying has become criminalized. She would have been treated as a weird outsider for being a Christian.
That's true. I mean, there were articles talking about the notion of the SNP having a Christian leader, and they were saying how it was like a weird notion or unusual.
Well, let me get into it, right? The Scottish leadership election was unusual in the attention paid to religion, contrasting with the remarkable lack of attention to Sunak's Hindu faith. And it could well be due to the difference of sectarian religious issues in Scotland that still persist, which don't in England, and the irreligiosity of the English, right? Given how close the final result was, 52% to 48%, Forbes's mishandling of fierce scrutiny over how she would handle clashes of conscience and equality law probably cost her this election. Well, it was an internal SNP election. Mm. So, yeah, well, one surprise, the insufferably progressive SNP nearly didn't vote for the incredibly progressive candidate. I mean, it's amazing she got 48% with her position on gay marriage, for example, right? But that she came so close surely proves that she has not been excommunicated from public life. So a Christian being a Christian, not yet excommunicated.
That framing is very revealing, isn't it? That they even bring up excommunication at all kind of suggests that, well, maybe they deserve it.
Yeah. A Muslim man being a progressive gets him laurel wreaths. I mean, Yousaf wants to change the law so abortion up to the point of birth will be legal in Scotland.
Monstrous.
Which will make it the most permissive in all of Europe, right?
It's already bad enough as is.
Yeah, exactly. Like 14 weeks or whatever it is. Europe is much more restrictive than the United States when it comes to abortion laws.
I think it's 20. It was something like 24 weeks in Britain.
Yeah, which is really permissive.
It's really late.
In like France, it's like 13 weeks or something. It's really early, you know.
When I had a debate with Connor, I said, at the very least, it should be 10 weeks because that's before, like, the brain, anything's formed, right?
And to be honest with you, I'm actually getting sympathetic to the Christian argument that, look, It's always a life. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point.
Well, my perspective on it was that I don't know enough about it to restrict people, but I personally wouldn't want to do it.
No, I mean, it's an evil either way. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could argue it's a necessary evil, but it's an evil either way. But the point is, a Muslim man being progressive gets him all of the plaudits that he could ask for. A Christian being Christian, now we're talking about excommunicating her and we're disappointed that she's not been excommunicated, right? They carry on. King Charles, okay, well, here we go. Surely the English can find some representation in their king, right? No.
Well,
he's an instinctive German. Yeah, but he's still the King of England, right? An instinctive multiculturalist will find it serendipitous to have acquired in 6 short months both a Hindu Prime Minister of the UK and a Muslim Prime Minister of Scotland to invite to witness being crowned by an Anglican bishop in Westminster Abbey next month. Right. So the imperial crown of Britain has been recreating. He's like, oh, look, this is like being the Emperor of India again, is what she's saying. Oh, he's saying that, sorry. You know, it's like, look, he's got a Hindu prime minister and a Muslim first minister, and, you know, now it's like old times. So, okay, great, but I thought the empire was over.
But also, we don't have the land. Just importing them in doesn't mean it's not just like the empire. It means it's the empire in reverse.
No, England's like the 30th most densely populated country in the world. But I mean, like, all of the other ones that aren't, that are above us on this list, are tiny island nations. So what can we do? Anyway, so why has Britain become such a pace setter for ethnic and faith diversity at the top in a way that cuts across our political tribes? Well, it's because there's only one political tribe, and that's the Blair tribe. That's why. The reasons are rooted in our long history, but each advance has depended on action to unlock that potential. So progress is Indians at the top and Indians in every other section of society. That's progress, right? The more Indians we have, the more we've advanced. The fewer Indians we have, the more backwards we've become.
It's nice to finally get a really good economic metric of development, yeah. Just quantity of Indians.
But again, this is written by an Indian person. So what they're advancing is a particular racial interest, and they've tied the notion of Britain's progress to their own racial interest. And any of the native people of Britain, they don't get to have a say in any of this. Mm. They are, in fact, the retrogressive aspect that needs to be overcome.
I know it's a bit of a staid point to make now, but imagine a white person writing an article like this. It would be, they'd probably be arrested, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, it would be illegal. It would be considered hate speech, right? But it's totally fine when they're doing it. Being British was the civic identity of a multinational state for 3 centuries. Ethnic minorities from Commonwealth backgrounds have felt a strong stake in the British identity. When that has been challenged, the response is often to double down, deploying the argument that racists and rejectionists need to learn some of this country's history. So that's interesting, because essentially what this is an admission of is that we're still being occupied by the British Empire.
I'm willing to entertain it.
Well, we are.
Go out in some boats, get some land again.
The Scots and the Welsh and the Northern Irish have devolved parliaments. But England has nothing, only the imperial regime in Westminster. And that's how they see this. There's no English representation. This coronation year coincides with the 75th anniversary of the arrival of the Windrush generation in 1948. The origins moment for how the post-war migration forged a multi-ethnic Britain. That's interesting as well, because that's an admission that Britain wasn't a nation of immigrants. That's very interesting. So that's good. Well, I mean, I agree, because it's true. You know, the first actual numbers of immigrants arrived in 1948. That's true. Yet there were 4 decades of absence. Ethnic minorities had next to no public voice as debates raged about their very presence in Britain. Pioneering Race Relations Acts were passed by all white parliaments. Kind of hard to argue about white supremacy if the white people are like, yeah, well, we need to make sure the white people treat the blacks well.
Mm-hmm. I think, actually, Britain has a pretty weird history when compared to the rest of the world for being quite accepting of people. Mm. Like, I mean, us going around spending our own money to abolish slavery around the world is probably good evidence of that. No one else did that, did they, really?
But how can you argue oppression when the parliament, as they say, staffed by all white people, was like, yeah, we're not having that? Mm-hmm. You can't argue that you've been systematically oppressed then.
And it was through moral arguments. It wasn't like there was political pressure being put on them. There wasn't this large block forcing them to make this concession. They chose to do it on their own.
It was totally from a moral perspective. To have ethnic minority MPs in a parliamentary democracy, it is not enough for political parties to want to be fair to hopeful candidates. They need to believe that voters will be too. Well, how did you end up with any minority MPs if the voters are not accepting of minorities? I mean, no one's complaining that Rishi Sunak's Indian.
Mm.
Like, no one complains about that.
I don't necessarily care what someone looks like. If they have my politics, then fine.
But this person is making it about identity. And it's like, okay, well, what does he see represented there? And, okay, well, why, you know, if this is the route you're going down, well, I don't feel very represented by Rishi Sunak. I don't think the people of Richmond feel represented by Rishi Sunak. I don't think the people of Scotland feel represented by Hamza Youssef.
Well, they're not.
Exactly, they're literally not.
I'm pretty sure most Scots don't want to be criminalised in their own home for their speech, do they?
But the South Asians do feel made present by this. Mm. This is the thing that is important. Exaggerated pessimism about public prejudice was a break on change as well as well into this century. To have ethnic minority national leadership sets a higher bar. These are macro symbolic roles, so it depends on the minorities being seen as fully part of the national us, equally capable of representing everyone. This is unlikely to happen if social relationships between those from the majority and minority run along them and us lines of mutual mistrust. And if progressives see ethnic minority politicians as representatives of minority communities first and foremost, that too could prove a barrier to national leadership. Well, I mean, you do see them as representatives of minority communities first and foremost. You do frame everything in terms of them and us, and yet we still have minority national leadership. So that implies that the left-wing framing isn't actually as powerful as they think. She carries on. He carries on. I don't know why I keep saying she. I didn't even pick up on it, sorry. There were just two Muslim MPs in 2001, yet 19 were elected in 2019, a majority of whom are women. This surge in British Asian leadership comes before Britain has seen a black party leader.
So what?
Yeah. So
in the words of Sajid Javid.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So what? It partly reflects demographics. Asians make up a tenth of the population, Black Britons 4%, but it may reflect contrasting group reputations stereotypes too. So even though they're like literally all of Asians in this country are 10%, so Pakistanis are like 4%, Indians are like 4%, Sikhs are like 2% or whatever, it may reflect these reputations, but it's not enough. It's not enough. We need more and more and more, even though it's 19 MPs were elected.
They want to carry on until things are like TV adverts where it's like, spot the white person.
Well, it's literally the English are not represented on their own TV. That's what they're aiming for. Right? We should be clear what more diversity at the top will not automatically achieve. We have more open elites by ethnicity, faith, and gender and sexuality, primarily for those with educational and professional credentials of the existing establishment. Yes. So they were brought in to the elite for some reason. And I find it bizarre. Why would any elite be like, yeah, well, we'll just bring these foreign elites? Why would we do that? Why would any elite
A veil of progressivism, isn't it? It's like, I've got this collection of token people who are going to make me not look racist.
Mm.
That sort of thing, isn't it?
I guess it must be. More diversity in politics might see more polarization on race, with the right finding greater confidence contests the left's previous dominance. Oh, at least we admit that the left has been dominant.
That's a rare admission, isn't it?
Incredibly rare. Like, you see why I wanted to go through this article, right? It's very rare that you get such a mask-off moment. Yeah, the left has been dominant in this country since 1997. Thanks for admitting it. Asian and black politicians can choose to be bridges or culture warriors in the media and politics, just as their white colleagues can. So really, really.
Oh, they're allowed to make up their own minds. But are they, though?
Whenever a white politician was like, we've got to do something about those grooming gangs, they literally got pilloried as being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Suella Braverman and Rishi Sunak are doing something, they can't just say, well, he's a racist, she's a racist, because they're brown. So they're like, well, the dog whistling's a racist.
I think what they could say is they're not being actively persecuted criminally for their views.
Well, it's the most charitable. Unlike Tommy Robinson. So whether diversity leads to policy change depends on the choices made by governments. Sunak's bulging in-train makes him unlikely to give race as much priority as Theresa May or David Cameron did. But why did they? Didn't they have the same pressures that Rishi Sunak has as Prime Minister? No, apparently not. You know, but I like that Rishi Sunak's like, yeah, I'm not going to care about race that much. And the Guardian's like, oh, that's a problem. You know, that's going to be really tough for us.
You can't call him racist because he's not white.
And Rishi Sunak's just like, well, I'm just going to do something. I mean, I don't even like Rishi Sunak.
No.
But he's obviously not nearly as bad as like someone like Hamza Yousaf. Anyway, they finish with, while national politics has set the pace, there should be pressure to emulate that elsewhere. How can newsrooms and lobby journalists keep pace with the ethnic diversity of the commons?
All right. Well, the Guardian's going to have to fire more white people, I think.
But it's just remarkable, isn't it? It's just remarkable. Despite a succession of ethnic minority chancellors, no FTSE 100 firm has yet promoted a British-born ethnic minority employee to the job. Look, just find a brown person. Right, that's what the Guardian is demanding. That's what all they've ever demanded. Progress in politics, as they say, sits in stark contrast to what Louise Casey's review of the Met Police shows about how badly policing's got stuck. Again, literally they're demanding, look, we just want brown people. They've got to be brown. If they're not brown, it's not progress. But that's what they're saying.
They're not applying to join the Met.
No, they're not.
The Met are struggling to keep people from communities.
Yeah, that's exactly true. But this is remarkable, isn't it? Right. Again, despite a succession of ethnic minority chancellors, no FTSE 100 firm has promoted a British-born ethnic minority. Progress in politics sits at stark contrast to this. As in, progress in politics is measured only by the number of brown people. That's it. That's the metric they use. That's the only one they have, right? The charity sector, too, lags behind, struggling to turn anxious conversations about diversity deficits into action to address them. Every institution of economic and cultural power must find more confidence about how to make the increasing diversity of Britain an everyday norm at all levels. It should not just be politics leading this race to the top. And now someone might ask, well, hang on a second. Why are the Conservatives, why did David Cameron do this? Right. David Cameron literally said, I'm going to have racial shortlists.
Or he's a Blairite.
Exactly. He is a Blairite. So the Conservatives, following in his footsteps, are what the Labour Party have made of them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Labour Party, the Party of Socialism, have turned the Conservative Party into the party they wanted them to be. Right. Do you know who Sundar Catwalla is?
I don't know.
As you can see there, the director of British Future and the former General Secretary of the Fabian Society.
Oh, it all makes sense. The Fabian Society.
The Fabian Society's logo is a wolf in sheep's clothing. I'm not joking. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing because they realised at the beginning of the 20th century that actually a revolution wasn't going to work in Britain. And so they would, by slow incremental progress, bring socialism about by pretending to be the sheep.
Stark, isn't
it? God save Rishi Sunak.
If you appreciated that segment from the podcast The Lotus Eaters, you can go to lotuseaters.com to get access to all the premium content that's on the site, such as the Brokenomics series, this episode on the business cycle. If you'd like to find out what else is being put out, you can follow on Getter at lotuseaters_com on Getter. Thank you and goodbye.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.